May Thurlow, Reel 5. Yes, you were saying about the time you had to go up in Erdington, wasn't it?
Yes.
Birmingham.
To remove a spotter.
Yes.
And I was sent up this very, very foggy morning at 6 o'clock. That was my duty time anyway. And I thought I was going to have a relief, but they didn't come up. You know, the one that calls out bearings and angles. But I didn't have anybody else there. And I couldn't see hand in front of me. And at that time, I was coming up, you know, 18 years of age. And I didn't ever smoke. And a couple of girls, you know, when you went into the nappies there, used to smoke. Said, you know, have a ciggy. It calms your nerves, you know. And I had a packet of cigarette weights, they're called. And, oh dear, it was eerie. Very eerie place, very quiet, and it was fairly wooded around.
Yeah. And you were alone?
I was alone, except for the plotters and the telephonist down in the plotting room. Mm-hmm. And I'd stand there outside, I had to be out in the cold all the time. And I stood on the roof of the plotting room. And then I came down and I thought I'd stand near the TI. It's a bit warmer there. I was freezing. I had battle dress on, by the way. Didn't have service uniform. When you was in the artillery, heavy on the guns, you wore battle dress, just like the men.
With trousers? Boots,
mm-hmm. Gaiters. I loved it, actually. Very smart, yes. I loved it. And the gloves and everything, yes. And steel helmet. You never went up without a steel helmet and your hat. And if you're going up on duty, it was you kept your hat in the lapel of your jacket and your steel helmet on your head. There's two episodes here I think I'd like to tell you about. This particular time with the fog, I thought, God, if only I could keep warm. If only I could keep warm. I've got these fur-lined suede gloves on, and it was freezing. It was one of the worst winters that we'd ever had. Ice, fog, it was dreadful. And I was standing there and I thought, I'll sit on the duckboard. If we had duckboards so that it lifted you up so you reached the TI, yes. If I sit on that for you, fold my legs, and I had my ground sheet on as well, over the top. And so, to keep you warm. And I was sitting there. And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll light a cigarette, take my gloves off, and I'll be able to warm my hands. So with that, I lit a cigarette with these matches that we had, put them back, and I thought, nobody's bound to come up. Nobody will be out there, and I'll see the door open of the plotting room if they want to tell me anything. You know, if there's, could I see anything? They will come up and say, is the fog cleared? You know, can you see anything? Or they would go, oh no, and they'd go down again. Or wind speed, they'd come up with an alter the wind speed on the side, so I would know what wind speed it was that was on. And so I knew I was okay, and the TI was right outside the plotting room. TI. And so I lit a cigarette up, and I was trying to warm my fingers by holding it in the middle of my hand to get those so numb. Dreadfully numb. And the next minute, what the hell do you think you're playing at? Soldier? God, I got frightened, dropped the cigarette, stood up quickly. He said, who the hell do you think you are? Hiawatha? Because I've got me ground sheet on me, my steel helmet on, and there's me with this little cigarette trying to keep my hands warm. Oh, God, so. What are you doing? What do you think you're doing? He said, I'm command post. You know you're not allowed cigarettes or any lighted thing here. Consider yourself on a charge. I said, I'm so sorry, sir. I'm so cold. He said, doesn't matter. He said, you're on duty. He said, you shouldn't be there. And he was a very, very strict man. Captain Horsey, his name was. And he really was strict. He actually came from our one with me, actually, over to there to relieve an officer. So he knew me, and when he came up, he said, "It's patient." He said, "I can't understand you doing this," he said. He said, "Well," he said, "you're on a charge." He said, "But I'm going to make you finish your duty," he said, "until you're relieved. Then I will have two soldiers," he said, "to march you down to battery office." He said, "And you will see Major Banfield." He said, "You will have to see him." So I said, "Yes, sir." So that's it. So I was eventually marched down. You know, oh dear, I was frightened then because that's my first charge as from a new soldier. Yes. And I went down back to the office and I was I'd be in a room with two soldiers standing until I was marched in at the double to the major's office. Come to attention, they saluted and I had to stand at attention. Still with all my gear on. And he said, "Have you anything to say, patient, of the episode that happened up in command post?" And so I told him the whole story. I said, "It was freezing fog, bitterly cold." I said, "I was stamping my feet. I couldn't feel my toes with my boots on." I said, "I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't feel my feet. Nothing." I said, "I couldn't feel anything in my body or my fingers." I said, "And I've only just started smoking, so about a week or fortnight." I said, "And I don't ever, ever smoke, perhaps one a day." I said, "But I was so cold." I said, "And I didn't smoke it." I said, "I was warming my hands." He said, "You didn't smoke it." I said, "No, sir. I was warming my hands to get the life coming back in my fingers, should there was a take post, and I could work my machine." I said, "That's all." I said, "He caught me unawares. I didn't see him coming round into the command post." I said, "Until he shouted and frightened the life out of me." So he said, "Well, patient," he said, "this is a serious offence, you know this." And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." I said, "But you won't shift me, will you? You'll still keep me in the Royal Artillery." He said, "We don't intend losing you, patient." He said, "You're qualified," he said, "spotter." He said, "We don't intend losing you," he said, "they're hard to come by." He said, "But I'm going to put you on a charge. You're going to have 7 days leave, 7 days CB, beg your pardon. And if you're due for a leave, you will lose it." So I said, "No, I'm not due for a leave, sir. Not until I leave here." So he said, "Right," he said, "7 days CB."
That's confined to barracks.
Confined to barracks, you was on the double. You had to be up and cleaning every bit of your equipment, standing by your bed, with your bed all folded up, your steel helmet on top of your blankets, all your paraphernalia, which you had to use for cleaning, all laid out every morning. Then you had to parade on the parade ground, at the double march to the parade ground. And you had to run round the command post, around the parade ground, with full kit. That was full kit, that was everything you carried on your back. Not your haversack, but your rucksack, your steel helmet, your gas mask, all that that you had to carry. So everything that was in your haversack, what you had to carry to go on different courses, you had to carry. And if they like to be funny, whoever was taking you wanted you to carry your haversack, they would make, if you was a bad soldier, really bad, then they'd make you do that as well. Then after that, you had to do jobs of painting the stones or cleaning rooms out, ablutions. And then in the afternoon you'd go to have your meal. They never stopped you from having your food, but it had to be at the double, so you had to eat it quick, that's right, and then back on parade, back again, running round the parade ground at the double. And then you had to do marching drill, and it's slow march, quick march, slow march, left turn, right turn, Oh, that kind of thing. Left wheel, right wheel. Oh, that. And, but at the end of the time, they were very, very good to me. Because I'd done everything by the book, right, they didn't report it to my battery that I had to go back to. The officer, Mr. Horsey, asked the major, did they have to make a report? Because I was such a good spot and a good soldier. So I'm not blowing my own trumpet, by the way. You know, I loved it. I absolutely adored it, in fact. I should have been born a boy and not a girl. Honestly, I should have been. And I loved every minute of it.
So can you tell me about other incidents recalled yes. in other batteries? I think you went to a country one, didn't you? Somewhere out in the sticks.
Oh, yes, that's yes, the one about the pig. That was down in South East. But there was one other one that I wanted to tell you about.
Right, you go in the order you
when
wish.
When I went back to my own battery, we used to get lots of raids up in Birmingham, really baddies. And if it wasn't our battery, it would be our other battery, all from the 145. That would bring a plane down, or it would be damaged. You know, on one occasion, we did get a Fokker Wolf down, and a 190E. And another time, we badly damaged, not the Dornier, the Junkers 88. And we saw smoke coming from that, but we never saw the disappearing. Or anything like that. It was lots that we had hit at different times, but you can't say that you brought everyone down because they went so far over and nobody knew where they landed, if they were in the sea or what, yeah. And this particular time it was a very, very bad raid. Now I must tell you this, it started in the middle of the night and all we had chance to do was put our trousers over our pyjamas on. And our greatcoats and our steel helmets. Run like mad. Now, this was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And as I told you, if the men ran first, came up, they were very fast, a lot of the men, and a lot of us dumplings would be running, and they'd catch up with us, and they'd say, all right, patient, and they're up around my arms, and your feet never touch the ground, honestly. And they would bring you up to the command post, but you'd be laughing all the time, you know. And they were marvellous, the men. It was a wonderful community, if you like. It was great, it really was. And a lot of these soldiers they lived in Birmingham, so they got night passes out if they went on duty. The Bull family, the Bix family, yeah, there was two brothers and another two brothers and all that. And this particular time it was very bad. So up we got, and straight away it was getting on target. And it was a moonlight night, very moonlight night. And it was all these planes, loads of them, you know, and they were dropping bombs on Birmingham, Wolverhampton, all around different areas of Birmingham. Yardley, Erdington, Perry Bar, different places of bombing. Coventry as well, I've got it as well at that particular time. And after the raids, and you know at the time, we didn't have earplugs. So the vibration and the noise of the guns was tremendous. Well, then we got the all clear. And this particular officer, he was new, but he wanted to show his authority. His name, I think, was Benson, and he was just one pip, yeah. And he was on duty, plus the major was there, but the major marched down when he got the all clear. We had to stay up there for half an hour in case we got take post again. So he came up to Julie, my colleague, we still write to one another, she lives in Peterborough, came up to him and said, very well done, well done. Then he looked at me and he said, patient, what are you doing with your steel helmet like, tin hat like that? So I said, pardon? He said, what are you doing with your tin hat at the back of your head like that? Well, that's a simple reason, sir. I said, may I just quote you? It's not a tin hat, it's a steel helmet, which I, you know, always thought it was heavy steel. So it wasn't tinny. And he said, your incident is not getting you anywhere. So I said, well, I've only thought I'd tell you. So he said, so what is it doing at the back of your head? So I said, well, when you're on the TI, sir, it's not like the predictor or the rangefinder. I said, I have to lean over onto the TI and look down. But I said, the actual thing is the actual instrument is then up in the sky. So you're looking down, and at the same time, it's up in the sky, which is a marvellous, you know, machine. And so that's no excuse. I said, but sir, he said, don't you answer me back. I said, but sir, I said, I did push my hat back, as you call it, tin hat. I said, I did push it back. I said, it goes back automatically. He said, for your incident, he said, you're on open arrest. Oh, yes. So I was called out to number four gun, two of the carriers, you know, the shell carriers, to come over and march me down on open arrest. And you've seen them all looking at me all over the guns. All the soldiers poking their head because it's all concrete around the guns, sort of a concrete wall. And in the concrete wall, there's little grooves where all the shells are. You know, so that's why they had the concrete around. And so, of course, they're all looking and sort of grinning and laughing. And there was someone was here and saying, well done, Pace. Well done, Pace, they called me. And you could hear the officer shouting out, be quiet and assure the next lot to go down. And they marched me down to straight away to his office. And asked me, do I apologise? And I said, no. I said, I wasn't being rude. I was explaining to you what the reason was for my steel helmet going back at the back of my head. So as you went forward like that, it knocked the front of your head, because there's a rim on it, knocked it back. But it was also a safety thing, really. Because if there was any sort of, what do they call it?
Flak.
That's it, the flak. Mm. And the shell bits coming from the fighters, you know, anything like that, was to come. It would save it going on your head. So I couldn't understand why that he had to be so rude and nasty to me. And they had got another spotter up. Well, not a spotter. A relief to come up and take over me. So Julie got onto the, she had to call her, you know, on target, and the other one would call her parents' names while I was down there. We did get another raid at that particular time. And then back up I had to go after. But the Major Banfield, he was very kind. And he said, I can understand. He said, there's no reason why you should have been charged whatsoever. And he said, you go back on duty. And to this officer said, Captain Benson, he said, I want you to stay. And that's it. I was marched out by the two men, straight up to the command post, and they were shouting your name. It really was wonderful, you know. And that was it. That was two times there. Mm-hmm. Now, after we was in Birmingham, we went to Wolverhampton. Same thing going on, all the firing and the bombing and so on. There was no relief whatsoever. When we got back to our Nissen huts, all their mugs and that was on the floor. Everything, you know, everything, some of the beds, the vibration, of the bombs dropping and the guns. And I must tell you this too, which is very important, the continued firing in Birmingham that particular night at Perry Bar was so severe that the actual gun barrels were red hot. Uh-huh. And even when we was down in South East, it was dreadful there.
That was in the country, wasn't it?
It was in the country of South East.
That would be interesting to ask you, because this would be very different from being in a town, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely. You've got the Fokker Wolves. They were dead crafty, and the Heinkels, and the Henschels, and the Messerschmitts, all those fighters coming through through the Downs. You know, they'd work their way around the back of the hills, and then they would come down into the valley, wherever they were, and start bombing and machine gunning. Really, really. So sometimes you couldn't get bearings and angles on them. The only ones you could get bearings and angles on at that time was the bombers. You know, all the heavy bombers. And that's what we had to go for. Then you'd find these fighters would come round, our fighters would go up, and they would follow them down, and they would force them up into their spray again. But they were dead crafty. They knew the Downs like the back of their hands. They really did, the Germans. There was no getting away from it. And the speed that they used to go, sometimes if you were lucky, you would get one as it was shooting up, because the Spitfire would come behind it and force it up. Or the Hurricanes, we had a lot of Hurricanes as well, used to be with them. And the Hurricane, I think, was a wonderful plane. More so than the Spitfire.
Why do you say that,
Well, Anne because Lee? They've done a lot more work than the Spitfires. You know, that not a lot was said about them, and I think they should have been. And I think they were very, very brave. We lost a lot of Hurricanes as well. I know we did. And even when I was over in Hornchurch, you know, you'd hear them and say, you know, number one went off and Terry 2 went somewhere, and, you know, we don't know if he's landed somewhere. You've got to hear different things very quietly, but only if he was picking up trays, you know, where they're taking tea and cake or sandwiches or meal. You know, you could hear that.
Staying in a place like South East, where would your billet have been?
It was in South East itself, next door to a farm of pigs. In fact, our Nissenhut was right beside of the fence, a wire fence, of the pig farm. Yeah, but it wasn't near the command post, of course. And the dining room area, that was all along that area of the pig farm. Well, I was attracted, and a couple of the girls were attracted by these little baby piglets. And the old farmer came up. It was before we went on duty. And I said, aren't they beautiful? And this girl said, oh, can we hold one? And so we all holding one. And, oh, they were gorgeous, tiny little baby ones they were. And he said, would you like one as a pet? So I said straight away, oh, yes, please. So he handed me this little tiny piglet, oh, it's a darling little thing. And the girl said, we won't be able to have that. I said, we can hide it. And this old boy gave us a box with holes in it so that if we could put it in there when we run up on duty or if we came down, we could feed it with bread and he would pass over food for it. But, you know, sort of oats and stuff like that. Well, we had it for 3 days and 3 nights. And then we had the corporals all right. You know, of the barrack room, as long as you don't get caught, she said, but don't drag me into it. You've only just got it if anyone finds out. Sergeant Crisp came in, it's a woman, and she could hear this, what the devil's that? And one of the girls was holding it, you see, but it was mine to take home when I got leave. So I was going to take this little piggy home. But she made me give it back. You can't have that here. You can wait till you go home and go in and get it, but you can't have it in here. And we'd had it for 3 days and three nights. And she said to the corporal, who was on duty at the time, did you know that they'd got this little piggy in the barrel? And she said, no, I didn't know nothing about it. So it was actually that we'd got it that day and we had to give it back the day. The farmer was ever so nice and he said he'd keep it for me.
Where did the gunners billet? You know, you would have had the women.
The men were still in the same, back in the same battery, same area, but they were well away. You know, they got the bells going into them the same time as we got the bell into us to take post. It was a loud bell going, and you got that.
See? And you were, so you were apart from the men,
oh,
would you
much.
Have been?
Oh, yes, but we could mix in the nothing. If you passed each other, as you were passing, you just said good morning, but you weren't allowed to stand talking in the paths of the whole of the battery. If you were marching, we still got marching drills and all that. If you weren't on duty, you still had to do marching drills and you were fatigued to do your barrack rooms or anything. That you had to do your own beds and that, but you had to polish the floors and clear the fireplace out and set the fire for the evening time. If you were lucky, you'd have a little bit of coal. If you're not, you didn't have a fire. Mm. And on one particular night, we were so cold at this particular time. It was during this period of me getting caught, actually, at that time, that I said that I, when I go up on duty, now I was on duty from, we used to pour on and two off, so I was on duty at 8 o'clock until midnight, and it's summertime, so it didn't start getting dark till 11, because you've got the British double summertime, remember, and so by the time I got off, I went down to the plotting room, and said, is there any more reports? And then I waited for the other spotter to come up and release spotter and come up and take over. Well, I was the last one on. After that, it was only if you got a raid. And then whoever was on duty, one platoon, say A platoon and B platoon. So if A platoon was on duty when there was a raid, A platoon went on, B platoon stood down and waited until their time was to take over. Especially if it was a raid, you had to make sure that you took over. If you couldn't stop firing, they had to stand there and hang on until such times as the all clear went and they stood up and then you marched down. Yeah. Well, this particular time, it was a quiet night, and I said to one of the girls, I'm going to take one of the duck boards, if I can get it, break it up and get it. Well, I had back the dress on, and I had my ground shoes on, you know, because of the night time, even in summer, it got chilly, so you needed that. So I was marching, I managed to break these duck boards, because they were fairly old. And they were sort of inch thick, I suppose. And there was about six panels to each duckboard. And we had three duckboards. The others had more, four. And not the rangefinders, because they had seats to sit on. For that, it's a very, very long instrument. So they had to sit on the seat and then they'd done their duty. And I managed to break them up. One of the chaps came up from the plotting room and said, what was I doing? I said, I'm taking some wood back. You won't split on me, will you? Said, I haven't seen nothing. I said, because we've got no firing down there. Nothing at all. And I said, it's bitter cold. So he said, as long as nobody sees you. He said, if you get caught, we don't know nothing. I said, thank you ever so much. His name is Jim. And so I broke these duck boards up. I had to keep them long. I couldn't do anything else but. And I stuck them under the and of me Gramsci, because I was off duty, nobody marched it down, nobody came up. It was the last hour. And I was holding them up like this, with marching down, because I had to hold them in case I slipped down. Up came one of the officers marching up to go to the plotting room. And as he came up, I supposed to have saluted. You see? Well, if I'd had my hat on, but I'd still got my steel helmet on. So I had a marvellous excuse, didn't I?